Hey, we're going to start at the top of Chedamad Aleph. We're going to go about five lines down there, Rav Nachman Yitzchak Amar. So if you remember from yesterday's daf, the Gemara is discussing the problem between, we have a stira between the brisos. One brisa says that if you bring a get and a sfina on a boat, it's like bringing an Eretz Yisrael, and therefore you don't have to say b'fane nechta, b'fane nechta. On the other hand, if you bring another brisa says if you bring a get, a sfina, it's like bringing it from Chutz Arts, which would require you to say b'fane nechtav, u'fane nechtam. So we attempted to give an answer in the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim, or even possibly in Rabbi Yehuda himself, with regards to a boat that has dirt and stuff planted on it, whether that has classification, Keretz Yisrael or not Keretz Yisrael. So now Rav Nachman Yitzchak tries a different approach. So how to reconcile these two braces? That everybody agrees, Binaro Keretz Yisrael, the Kuleyam Elo Plige. Everybody agrees that the boat is along the rivers of Eretz Yisrael. That's part of Eretz Yisrael, so there's nothing to talk about, and you would not have to say b'fane nechtam, b'fane nechtam. Ela ki plige b'yam ha-gadol. Their argument is about the Mediterranean Sea. D'tanya, we have a machlokes about the status of the Mediterranean Sea. Ezu aretz ve'ezu chutzlaretz. What's considered part of Eretz Yisrael? What's considered part of chutzlaretz? Kol she'shofei yored mi-turei amnon neved lifnim. Anything that comes down from turei amnon and within Eretz Yisrael. Turi Amnon l'chutz, from Turi Amnon and outward is Chutz La'aretz. So now Turi Amnon is the border for Eretz Yisrael at the northwestern point of Eretz Yisrael. It's up into Lebanon along the coast. That is the northwestern point. According to Rashi here, Turi Amnon was a sloping mountain that sloped to the south and sloped to the north. So therefore, when the Gemara says Koshel Bifnim is considered part of Eretz Yisrael, that means anything to the south. Anything from the peak of the mountain southward on that slope, anything inward south of that area will be part of Eretz Yisrael. So the slope on the northern side, that from the peak is already outside of Eretz Yisrael. So anything towards the north, Bachutz, means towards north. That's the way Rashi learns. On the other hand, Tosfos says, no, the Turi Amnon is a mountain that actually slopes east-west, meaning that the mountain's on the coast and the western slope goes into the water, towards the water. And therefore, over here, Tosfos says, when it says Lifnim and Lachutz, it's talking about west and east. In that, since it goes Latadmarav, that the Chodo Shahar, the peak of the mountain, is the western part of Eretz Yisrael. This is the western border of Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, anything to the east, Lifnim, would be considered part of Eretz Yisrael. Anything Lachutz means to the western side of the Shipua, or to the incline of the mountain, that would be considered outside of Eretz Yisrael. Truthfully, they don't have to be mutually exclusive. You have a mountain here and a peak. Could be that the mountain slopes both to the north and south, and also to the east and west. And therefore, when it talks about Lifnim, Lifnim can be both to the east and to the south, meaning towards the part that are part of Eretz Yisrael, and Lachutz could be to the north and to the west, which would be considered outside of Eretz Yisrael. So again, Turi Amnon are the northwestern point of Eretz Yisrael. And then we go, the Gemara continues. So, Mituri Amnon Lechutz Chutz La'aretz. Nasir Shebayam, the islands that are in the Mediterranean. Ro'ino Tam, Kilu Chut Matuach Aleim Mituri Amnon Anachal Mitzrayim. So we look at it as if there's a line or a string, meaning as the bird flies, between Turi Amnon, which is the northwestern border of Eretz Yisrael, and Nachal Mitzrayim. Nachal Mitzrayim is the southwestern border of Eretz Yisrael. So everybody knows that Eretz Yisrael does not, the coastline is not a straight line, but actually curves inward. If you're talking about a point that's all the way up north, and the northwestern point up in Lebanon, by its side and Tyre, a little south of there, that is areas, if that's considered part of Eretz Yisrael northwestern, and Nachal Mitzrayim, which is actually much further west than Turi Amnon, is the southwestern border of Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, the coastline curves to the west as it comes down south. So if you were to draw a straight line from Turi Amnon to Nachal Mitzrayim, that would not necessarily follow the border of the landmass, but that would actually cut through the ocean, right through the middle of the Mediterranean. And it's exactly what the Tanakhama and the Chachamim are suggesting over here. If you go as the bird flies between Turi Amnon and Nachal Mitzrayim, the northwestern border of Eretz Yisrael and the southwestern border of Eretz Yisrael, and draw a straight line down, all that is contained as part of Eretz Yisrael. That means even stuff, the Mediterranean itself, and the islands that are found in the Mediterranean, that area under inside that line, to the east of that line, would be considered part of Eretz Yisrael. That's what the Gemara says. Mituri Amnon ad Nachal Mitzrayim min achut v'lifnim Eretz Yisrael. Anything to the east of the chut, this line, would be part of itself. Min achut v'lachut, from this line and outward, meaning to the west, is chutz la'aretz, that's outside. Now, question today, there are no islands in that space. Even if you took a line from up into Lebanon, on the northwestern corner, to Nachal Mitzrayim, along the coast of Eretz Yisrael, there are no islands. So I heard from some that suggest that places like Tyre in the ancient times, the biblical times, were actually islands. A lot of stuff that today, cities that are peninsulas, back in the time of the Tanakh, those were actually islands. So the possible suggestion is that some of those coastline cities were actually islands, and they would be included in Eretz Yisrael, according to the Chachamim. Now, Rehuda Omer, Kosher Keneged Yisrael, Harehu Keretz Yisrael. Anything that is opposite Eretz Yisrael to the west has a din like Eretz Yisrael. Shenamar, the Pasuk says, when it's giving out the borders of Eretz Yisrael, so this upcoming Parsha, Matos Masi, we're coming up, Gvul Yam, V'yelechem Hayam HaGadol, Ugvul, Zeh L'yelechem Gvul Yam. So the word Gvul, this Ugvul, is an extra word. So therefore, V'anasim, Shibet Tzadidim, right, so these islands that are in the Mediterranean, Ro'inotam, Kilu Chut Matuach Aleyem, Mikaf Floria, V'yayom Hayam Okeanus. So this is according to Rashi, Kafloria is actually a city at the peak of Toriamnon. So Rashi says, we look as if there's a string from the top of Toriamnon westward until the Atlantic Ocean. When we Nachal Mitzrayim, and from that southwestern point of Nachal Mitzrayim, if you draw a line directly to the west, Adyom Okeanus, Minachut V'lifnim Eretz Yisrael, Minachut V'lifnim Eretz Yisrael, and in between those two straight lines, if you took two parallel lines that are running east-west, the eastern point of the upper line is Toriamno and Kafloria. The western point of the upper line is the Atlantic Ocean. And then on the lower line, meaning the southern line, you have from Nachal Mitzrayim, which is the eastern end of that line, to the border all the way to the ocean, Atlantic Ocean again, which is the western point. Between those two lines, from north-south, between those two lines, would be all part of Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, places like Cyprus, Crete, places that are found in the Mediterranean, according to this, according to the position of Rabbi Yehuda, would be included in the borders of Eretz Yisrael. It's interesting to note here that Rashi points out that there are no other land masses after that point. Meaning, like today, we know that if you continue those lines to the west, they would end up in the parts of the Americas that would possibly be part of Eretz Yisrael. But Rashi only says, and Rashi over here says, "Afilu ad Okeanus Lamarav Shu Besofa Ulam." That's the end of the world. So for him, the Atlantic Ocean is the end of the world. There's no land mass beyond the Atlantic Ocean, and therefore, what's included in this area or in these islands are islands that are found in the Mediterranean that are west of the borders, the north and south borders of Eretz Yisrael. So now the Chachamim disagree and say no, that the only thing that's included in the borders of Eretz Yisrael is if you take as the bird flies from Terei Amnon in the northwest down to Nachal Mitzrayim, a straight line, anything that's captured in the Mediterranean, that space, would be included in the Gvulim of Eretz Yisrael. Now, based on that Ugvul, that extra word Gvul tells you that the Gvul extends all the way to the west. That not only is the Eretz Yisrael, meaning that the Yam, the Mediterranean Sea, the border, but it's also part of Eretz Yisrael, meaning anything found in the Mediterranean or the Mediterranean, the water itself, is considered part of Eretz Yisrael. Rabbanan v'hai Gvul mayavdile, what do they do with that extra word Gvul? By the way, Nassim, to teach you that these islands are included. So, my Rabbi Yudo, Nassim, Lotrichikro. But you don't need a pasuk for the islands, because if these are the borders extend out into the water, and it's obvious that it includes the islands. Now, based on this machlokas between the Rabbonon and Rabbi Yehuda, then we have an explanation for the Braisa. So, if you have some landmass or a boat that is found west of the line that runs from Turi Amnon to Nachal Mitzrayim, according to Chachamim, that's Chutz Laaretz. It's west of that borderline, that straight line that you draw. And therefore, you'd have to say, B'fanei Nechtav, U'fanei Nechtam. Whereas according to Rabbi Yehuda, that's still part of Eretz Yisrael. Anything along that is to the west of Eretz Yisrael is considered part of Eretz Yisrael in the Mediterranean. Therefore, there's a boat in that space, even west of the line between Tiryamna and Nachal Mitzrayim. That would be considered part of Eretz Yisrael. And you would not have to say, B'fanei Nechtav, U'fanei Nechtam. It's a very, very interesting Tosos over here by Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Kosher Keneged Yisrael. It's the second Tosos on the Daf. Sha'al Rabbeinu Peter the Rabbi Rabbeinu Tam. Sounds like Peter. Rabbeinu Peter asked Rabbeinu Tam. The Bizman is there. We who live, in France, right, to the west of Eretz Yisrael, right? Hayal is Chayev, Rabbi Yehuda B'Maiser. We, according to Rabbi Yehuda, should be Chayev B'Maiser. We're west of Eretz Yisrael, so should we include Eretz Yisrael? Shanu B'Marava Shel Eretz Yisrael. V'Heshiv, So the Rabbeinu Tam says, don't worry about it. We don't hold like Rabbi Yehuda. But Tosfos continues and says, well, according to Rabbi Yehuda, how do you know that everything west of Eretz Yisrael they were Bikim Lishma. If the whole issue over here, a wife to say, Pani Nechtam, Pani Nechtam, so we know Bikim Lishma, how do they know that all these people out in the islands or in the west over there were also included in this concept of Bikim Lishma? So you have to say, number one is, those areas were not conquered by the Olei Bavel. Those areas to the west of Eretz Yisrael in the Mediterranean were not conquered by the Olei Bavel. So therefore, they would not be included in what's considered Eretz Yisrael in the time that the return of the Jews and the time after the Babylonian exile. Inami, the other possibility is like, he says, like Rashi explains. Rashi explains that the only things that are included in the west of Eretz Yisrael are not any land masses. Anything that's connected to the continent itself, in the European continent or the African continent, and that's a landmass, that's not included in those lines. The only things that are included are islands in the Mediterranean or the Mediterranean itself. Meaning that you would not include places like Italy, would not be a part of Eretz Yisrael, but rather places like Cyprus and Crete, which are islands in the middle of the Mediterranean, they would be included. So based on that, then obviously where they live today would not be Chayv and Maestros because they were living in Europe. And that part, those parts of Europe were part of the main body of the continent, and therefore their land masses are not included in the borders of Eretz Yisrael. The last possibility that Tosfos gives is that they knew all the Jews that lived. Until a certain point, to the west, there were Jews in those islands that they knew for sure the Jews were Bikim Lishma. Beyond that, the assumption was that those islands were inhabited by non-Jews, and therefore it wasn't relevant the issue of Bikim Lishma, Lo Bikim Lishma, because no Jews came from those areas. The places that were close by there, so Jews lived on those islands, they knew that those were Bikim Lishma, and therefore they just said anything that's in Eretz Yisrael, meaning that anything to the west would also be included in Eretz Yisrael, and they'd be Bikim Lishma. Right now, the Gemara continues. Rameh Omer Akko Ke Eretz Yisrael. So we saw Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah delineated the borders of Eretz Yisrael, meaning to the east was Rechem, to the south was Ashkelon, to the north was Akko. And Rabbi Yehuda says that Akko is Kitzafon, meaning it's outside of Eretz Yisrael. It's considered Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Meir argues on that and says, Rabbi Meir says that Akko is like Eretz Yisrael. So, by Mene Rabbi Chir Ba'ava, Amokar Abdel Usuria, someone sells out a slave to Syria, Gamokar Bechutzlar, says if he sold him to Chutzlar, Dami, Olo, or maybe not. What's that mean? I mean that if you sell your Eved to Chutzlar, it means you sell him to another owner outside of Eretz Yisrael, the Eved goes free right away because you're not allowed to take him out of Eretz Yisrael. By selling to Chutz Laaretz, you can take him out of Eretz Yisrael, and then he has the right to go free at that point. So, Amaleh Tanitua, we learned this in our Mishnah. Rabbi Meir Omer, the answer to this question is in our Mishnah. Rabbi Meir Omer, Akko, Eretz Yisrael, the Gittin. When Rabbi Meir says that Akko is a din of Eretz Yisrael, that's only for get. For Gittin in, Avadim Lo. But when it comes to servants, that's not the case. Akko would be considered Chutz Laaretz, and therefore, if you sold somebody to Akko, that would be the equivalent of sending him to Chutz Laaretz, and he would go free. Now, we know that what? That Surya is much further north than Akko. So therefore, Surya, Bekoshkin, Surya, the Merchakatuva. Certainly, Surya is considered Chutz Laaretz, the God by selling an Eved, because if Akko already is considered Chutz Laaretz, then certainly Surya, which is much further north, is also going to be considered, right, outside of Eretz Yisrael, and they will have the Knas, that if you sell an Eved to Chutz Laaretz, then he's entitled to go free. Now, Tarabana, Bishlosha Drachim Shavtat Surya Eretz Yisrael, Shlosha Lechutz Laaretz. In three ways, Surya was similar to Eretz Yisrael, and three ways, it's similar to Chutz Laaretz. So what is it, how is it similar to Chutz Laaretz? Number one is Afrat HaMeka Chutz Laaretz, that it's land or dirt is Tameh, therefore anybody who goes into Chutz Laaretz becomes a Chum or goes there, they become Tameh, Tameh Meis. So too, when you enter into Surya. So it's equivalent of what, this is our case that we just mentioned before, that someone who sells a slave out to Surya to go and selling him into Chutz Laaretz, and therefore he's entitled to leave. Maybe get me Surya, maybe Michul. That a person brings a get from Surya, it's equivalent of bringing it from outside of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore you would have to say, Bufane Nichtav, Ubufane Nichtav. Ubishlosh Eretz Yisrael. And in three ways it's similar to Eretz Yisrael. What are the three ways that Surya is like Eretz Yisrael? Number one, chayevet v'maiser u'b'shviis k'Eretz Yisrael. They're chayevim in maiser and shviit like Eretz Yisrael. And number two, arotu likanes la b'tara nichnas. Someone who wants to go in and b'tara means to remain tahor. That is possible. So Gemara will ask, how's that? We just said before that afra tameh, that it's anybody enters it's become tameh because it's landmass land is considered tameh. So then, how could you possibly get in there b'tahara? So that the Gemara will address. Sadeh b'Suria, someone who buys a field in Suria, Kekona, Be'par Varei, Yerushalayim, so coming and buying in the outskirts or the suburbs of Yerushalayim. So now the Gemara is going to dissect each of these issues. So now, what does it mean, Chayevet b'Maser b'Shvi'i k'Eretz Yisrael? Why is it Chayev in Maser and Shvi'is like Eretz Yisrael? How did it become like Eretz Yisrael? So Gemara says, Kasavar kibush yachid shmei kibush. The conquest of an individual is considered a conquest. So what does that mean? What's the difference between kibush rabim, the conquest of the tzibur, versus the kibush yachid? So Rashi suggests that the issue, or what it means that we're talking about a kibush yachid over here, has to do with the difference of how the kibush is done. So if you look in Rashi, kibush yachid, the David, when David HaMelech, who's the one who conquered Syria, Aram Tzarayim and Aram Tzova, so lo ayu kol Yisrael bi'achad. Not all the Jews were together going out to battle. Kederek shayu b'kibush Yoshua, the way they were in the conquest of Yoshua. Sheu kulam, all of Bnei Yisrael were fighting, all of Bnei Yisrael were part of the kibush, the conquest. Right? B'kavshu l'tzorach kol Yisrael, kodem chaluka. And the conquest was for everybody. Why was the conquest for everybody? Because they still hadn't divided up the land. So therefore, any piece of land could have belonged to any person or any shevet. And therefore, when they conquered it, they all went together to conquer it. And number two is, that conquest could belong to any person in Klal Yisrael. So therefore, that's considered kibush derabim. Whereas David, lo kavash elo tzorcho. David only went out to Syria for his own benefit, meaning he was appending land to Eretz Yisrael, to his empire. But that wasn't done with Klal Yisrel, with everybody. And also, the land had already been divided up. So based on that, Kibush Yochid, David, who went out to conquer Aram Tzov and Tzorayim, is Machlokas, whether Kibush Yochid Shmei Kibush is a qualified conquest. So if you consider it a qualified conquest, then those areas would take on Kedushat HaAretz, and therefore you'd be Chayv and Maestros and Shviz. Whereas, if you believe Kibush Yochid Lo Shmei Kibush, that an individual cannot create conquest, in the sense that he cannot create the Halachic conquest, then anything that the individual conquers would not be chayev, would not have kedushat haaretz, would not be chayev in maestros and shviz. That's what our Gemara is saying. It's clear from this idea that Surya has a din like Eretz Yisrael by maestros and shviz, that we're talking about that this Tana believes that kibush yochid, shmei kibush, that is a good kibush. Point out here that Tosfos disagrees with Rashi's pshat on what kibush yochid is, and Tosfos brings down what is more commonly explain to what Kibush Yochid is. He quotes it from a Sifri in Parshat Ekev. He says that the problem was that when David went to conquer Aram Tov and Aram Tzarayim, Syria, he had not completed the complete conquest of Eretz Yisrael. Because what do we know? Who was living in Yerushalayim at the time of David until the time David conquers it? Are the Yebusi? The Yebusi lived there. I mean, that we even see in the time it's on a town that's on the border of Yehuda and Binyamin. And neither of them conquer Yerushalayim, so the Yebusi remain in a stronghold in that area. And you see in the story in Shoftim by Pilegesh B'Givah, when the man's traveling, he doesn't want to stop by Yerushalayim because the Yebusi lived there. It was not a Jewish city. He doesn't want to stay there. He goes on to the Jewish city. He goes to try to find a Jewish city, so he doesn't stop by Yerushalayim. So the Midrash is criticized, the criticism of David is that he went out and conquered Aram Tov and Aram Tzarayim, and he didn't take care of Yerushalayim, things that are part of the Eretz Yisrael, the full conquest of Eretz Yisrael. So based on that medrash, the problem why Kibush Yochid doesn't work over here is not because Kibush Yochid is Shmei Kibush, but Kibush Yochid doesn't work when you haven't conquered the entirety of Eretz Yisrael. If you conquer the entirety of Eretz Yisrael, then any Kibush or any extension of Eretz Yisrael becomes and takes on the Kedushat Haaretz. That would be considered Kibush Rabin. When is it considered Kibush Yochid is when you don't take care of conquest of Eretz Yisrael first. So in this case, David had not conquered the entirety of Eretz Yisrael. The Yebusi was still in Yerushalayim. Yet, he went and conquered Aram Tzov and Aram Naharayim. He went up and conquered Syria. So now that's considered Kibush Yochid. So now they have the Machlokas, whether Kibush Yochid has a din of Kedushat Haaretz or not. But had he completely conquered Eretz Yisrael and then gone out to conquer it, that Tosfos says would be considered Kibush Rabin. And you could append it and add it in to be part of Kedushat Haaretz. So now the Gemara asks the steer that we pointed out in the statement for. Arotza likanes labetara nichnas. Someone must go in, Betaro, he can go in as he wishes. Didn't you say that the Afar, the landmass, is Tamei? Like Zerah of Futsart. How could you go in, Betaro? The landmass is Tamei. So Mara says his famous reasoning all the time that Beshida Teva Migdal. He goes in and some sort he's transported into that area. So Tazza says not only Shida Migdal and Teva, but even he's riding on a sus, on a horse. in that he does not touch the ground. He gets into the airspace of Surya, but does not come into contact with the ground of Surya. So the ground is Tamei, in a sense that it's Mitame B'mago V'maso. Hey, the ground or the earth is that way. But with regards to Ohel, that you're not Mitamei. Therefore, if you're in a Shida Migdo Tevor, you're somehow transported into the airspace without touching the ground, you will not be Tamei. So that's what the two gates, when it says that it's Afra Tamei, that's talking about coming into contact with the ground. It's talking about that it's, you could be Nichnas Tatara, that means in its airspace you can get in there. The time you have a bright so the Nichnas there, I mean, Bashir the table, Migdal, Rabbi Mitamei, right? Rabbi's Mitamei. Somebody goes in and is jettisoned in, that's according to Tosus and Nazir, somebody's jettisoned in a Shida Mitava Migdal, then they are according to Rabbi Tamei, because it's an Ohel Zaruk. It's a moving Ohel, and an Ohel Zaruk is Lo Shmei Ohel, it doesn't protect you. Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda Mitayer, and on the other hand, Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda believes that you are Tahor, because eight Ohel Zaruk is Shmei Ohel. So Tosfos Nozir points out that Rabbi only holds that an Ohel Zaruk is Lo Shmei Ohel when it's jettisoned, when you have no attachment to the ground. But if, for instance, if you're riding on a horse, or somehow you have contact to the ground, that's not considered an Ohel Zaruk, a thrown or jettisoned Ohel, and therefore would be a qualified Ohel. His proof is from the by Paraduma. In the case of Paraduma, we know that they used to seclude, children to be brought up in Tara to do the Paraduma. So those children that were brought up to do the Paraduma, when they transported them to do the process, or the Paraduma, the whole process of the Paraduma, they used to transport them on animals that should be an OL to protect them from Tuma or Tuma's Tome. But if you say that a moving OL is not an OL, then how does that help that they were riding on an animal? That's where Tosfos concludes that what? Only when it's moving is jettisoned, there's no contact with the ground, is considered an ol zaruk, a moving ol. Whereas when you're on an animal, or when you have contact to the ground, or on a carriage of some sort, a caron, or a wagon, then Tosfos thinks that you're not an ol zaruk, you're a regular ol, because you have contact with the ground. So based on this, we see what? That there's a differentiation between the avir and the gush, meaning that between the airspace and the ground itself. Rafilu Rebbe lo kamitamei el be'eretz amim. Rebbe over there who says you're tamei be'eretz amim, even if when you go in an object that's sealed up and looks like an ol, the gazra gusha v'alav v'ira. Because in those places they were going there not only the gush, meaning on the magan matzo of touching and carrying of the earth, but al v'ira, even the airspace is tamei. Al surya al gusha gazru. By surya, the only where it goes are on the land mass itself. Al v'ira lo gazru. But in the airspace they were not gozer. So this points out that here the definition is a little different than Nozir. We had the same similar sugi in Nozir. Over there, when it talked about Gusha, it meant that you were Tamei B'maga Masa and regular Ohel. Avira meant that you were Tamei even when you were inside of an Ohel. I mean, it penetrates the air space when you're Tamei no matter what. Whereas over here, the differentiation with that when we say Mago and Masa, that's talking about Gusha, the landmass, and Avira is talking about Ohel, regular type of Ohel. So even though these definitions are the same terms, Gush and Avira, are used here and in Nazir, over there it means something else. And over here it means something else. What does that mean? Over here, Gush means the land, meaning Maga Masa, coming in contact, direct contact with land. Avira means Ohel. Over there in Nazir, Gush means Maga Masa and Ohel. Avira means exceptional Ohel, super Ohel, which means that even when you are protected and you're in an Ohel, then nevertheless you still are Tamei when you go into Eretz Yamim, because Avira, the airspace, is Tamei. Right? But nevertheless, for Surya, that's different, and that's what our that Bryson meant. Kone Sadeb is Surya, Kone Parvare Yushalayim. So he buys land in Surya, it's like he bought it in the outskirts of the suburbs of Yushalayim. So what? What does that mean? It's like buying in Yushalayim. So Amar Rosh Lamar, Shukotvim Alabo, no. That you can write on it a contract to buy land in Surya, Bafilu B'Shabbos, even on Shabbos. Rosh B'Shabbos, Sakhla D'Atcho. What do you mean? How can you violate a Malacha Doraisa, like a Ksiva, in order to buy land for it to show? So Gemara says, Kedama Rabba, Omer Lovi Kachav Moseh. Hachanami, Omer Lovi Kachav Moseh. No, that here we're talking about Amir La'akum. You can ask a non-Jew to act on your behalf, even though Amir La'akum generally is a Shavuos, means that's Osir Midrabbanon. Nevertheless, we allow you, we make an exceptional case, that Afagav the Amir Lovakim Shavuos, Mishum Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, Gozru Rabbanan. Rabbanan were not gozer about Amir La'akum in the face or in the prospect of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, the ability to settle the land of Eretz Yisrael. Because Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, according to Rashi, is the Garish of the Chachamim, because buying the land eliminates the non-Jews that are living there, but they shave Yisroba. And then secondarily, or in addition, it allows for the settlement by the Jews. So therefore, we allow, or we, because of this special mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, or we don't believe it's a mitzvah, but mitzvah kumis of living in Eretz Yisrael, or that it's a mitzvah, some say it's an all-encompassing mitzvah, whatever it is, this Maila of doing Yishuv Eretz Yisrael entitles one through Amir La'akum to violate Shabbos in order to be Kona this land, because that's how important we feel it is. Right, Tosfos over here discusses whether the cases over here when we allow Amir La'akum are unique to these cases, and also a case by Mila. The other case where we say Amir La'akum is allowed is by Bris Mila. So Tosfos discusses, first of all, is Amir La'akum allowed by Bris Mila only in the case of Mitzvos Derabbanan, or even in the case of Isurim de Rabbanan, or even the face of Isurei de Oraisa. And number two, he says that maybe Mila is unique. Bris Mila might be unique because Mila is Docha Shabbos. So if Mila is Docha Shabbos, so too, they're Chama allowed a Mila Akam to be Nidche for to take care of the baby. But that would not be true necessarily of other mitzvahs. If you want to see more, you can look in the Tosfos with regards to this. Tana Rabbanan. Evet Shivi Gito, Lakatov Bo, Atzmcha, Vinechsai, Kinuyim Lecha. If it comes with a document that says that I, my master, give to my servant, Atzmcha, you yourself, Vinechsai, and my possessions. So the Gemara says, Atzmokono, he himself, he was Kona himself, meaning he's a free man now, the Chasim Lokono, but the possessions he's not Kona. Ibailahu. Now, what happens if a person makes a statement of Kol Nechsai Kanuyim Lach? The master says to his Eved, all my possessions are Kanuyim. Mahu, what's the din? Meaning that in the previous case, he specified that the slave owns himself, goes free, and in addition, that he's entitled to all the property. So Gemara says, we believe him, we can split that up. We'll say by the fact that the Eved's free, that we go with. That he gave him all his possessions, that we don't go with. In a second, we will see why that is. Now the Gemara wants to know, what happens in the case where I say kol nechsei, if I say all my possessions, then he doesn't differentiate between an Evan and a chassim. Mo, what's the din? I'm right, mitok shekana atzmo, because in this instance, he will be kon himself, that he'll go out to be a ben chorim, kon and a chassim, therefore he also is kon and a chassim. So Abai sees an equivalent, that either works or doesn't work. So over here, if it works for him to go free, it also works for him to be kon and a chassim. I'm like, oh, but bishlam atzmo liknei, how does that make sense, that he can be kon himself, mizahava get isha? That's like a get of a woman. Why? Because she can bring her own get. So too an Eved can bring his own freedom document. And he's believed, just like a woman is believed, that this is her get. Right? And she can say, V'fani nechta v'nechta. Hele nechassim lo liknei mida hava kiyum shtaras. But why can he take possession of the quote-unquote possessions? Because this is regular validation of a shtar. A validation of a shtar, kiyum shtaras da'amo, you need Edom for that. You need either to two Edom to testify to the signatures, or the two Edom themselves inside have to come and validate this shtar. So over here, how can you give away the nechassim to this Eved? He doesn't have a validation of the shtar. Now, by get, we said that we're mekil because of iguna. Because of the possibility that of igun, and therefore, the chama were mekil by a woman that even one Ed can come and say, v'fanechtam, now be sufficient, but that's not true by a regular shtar, a kiyum shtaros. So, Abaye says, alright, I'm a Rava, that your statement Abaye that draws the equivalence between the two doesn't make sense. It makes sense that he can go free, doesn't make sense that necessarily that he inherits the property. So, Hadar Mar Abaye, mitok shlo kono, nechassim lo kono atzmo. Because if he's not able to be kono, then nechassim, he should also not be able to kono himself. He's going to buy seize the two. You can't be Paul Gideon Deburi. You can't split up anything over here. He said, Kol Nechsai. Made one statement for both the possessions and the Eved. Made one statement for both the possessions and the Eved. Then the same din must apply to them. So first he suggested, Migo, since the Eved can be called himself, he should also be called in the Chassim. Then he reversed that position and said, no. Abaye says, no. If the Eved can't be called the Chassim, then he can't be called himself. It's a single statement. We can't divide the statement up. Tosfos says that Rabbi's reversal position has nothing to do with Rava. He's not responding to Rava, but this is Rabbi thinking about the logic of the svar of it, and this is what he thought at this point. So I say, Amalei Rava Bishlam and Achasim Lo Liknei Da'ava Kiyum Shtaros. All right, it makes sense that he can't inherit the possessions because that's regular Kiyum Shtaros, validating a shtar, and validating a shtar requires regular Edus. Da'ama El Atzmo Liknei, but he himself should be called himself Da'ava Get Isha. Because that's equivalent to get Ishan. A woman does not need two Edim to validate the get. And because of Igon, we say that what she can say before Nechtaf and Nechtam, and it's sufficient when Eid says it, or if she herself brings it and can say that. Now, the only question is, if the Gemara here seems to see that one Eid would be that the get Isha and Eved, Shichur Eved, will be equivalent. In the sense that they're equivalent, that means that they don't need regular Kiyam Shtaros. So by an Isha, we know why you don't need Kiyam Shtaros, or you can have one Eid say before Nechtaf and Nechtam because of Igon, meaning that Aguna, right there, the Gzera Agunot. What type of igun do you have by an evet? Tosfos says, it's actually on Tedam and Aleph, Tosfos says over there, that the chash of igun for the evet, that he can't marry a bat chorin, that he can't marry a free woman. And also, mashenu t'chay b'mitzvot, and therefore he doesn't have a full chiyuv mitzvot. Because of that, that's considered igun, and chamim also, again, we're makil by an isha, and also by an evet. But a regular shtar in the chosim, it can't be. So, elo, amar rabo. Rabo says, echad zev, echad zev. Whether the statement was made, meaning the first statement we had in the Gemara, which means that he divided it up. He says, you are kona yourself, right? That you're achsmecha, and you and your my possessions are kona to you. Or in the case we just said, kol nechsai, all my possessions are nicknamed to you. Rabbi says, echad echad, both of these cases, atzma kona, the Eved is kona himself. Aval nechasim, lo kona, but the possessions he is not kona. Again, the reason being why? Because he can be kona himself, just like, because we have the kula, just like why by having isha. That you not need validation of the get, full validation of the get, like kiyum shtaros, and therefore you can go free. But when it comes to nechassim, that's like a regular shtar, an issue for a regular shtar. Since that is a regular shtar, you have to be mekayim the shtar. Without the kiyum shtar, we're not going to give you the possessions. So we are what we called over here palginan dibura. We divide up his statement into, we validate it, we allow part of the statement to go true, and part of it not to be true. So tomorrow's Gemara will discuss this idea of palginan dibura, which is the position of Rabbi Shimon. We'll stop here.